Welcome to Module 5, Context-Free Languages. Open the Grané and et al. Slides. I guess they're the slides for Conf 335. And on slide 2, it mentions that the language A to the N, B to the N, where N is greater than or equal to 0, is not a regular language. Okay. Regular languages can be described with regular expressions. There's no way you're going to describe A to the N, B to the N with a regular expression. Similarly, the language WW reversed, which stands for palindromes, is not a regular language. There's no way we can describe that language using a regular expression. But they are languages, and we are going to be able to describe them, but not using regular expressions. So on slide 3, it shows that those two languages are outside the regular languages. In fact, they're part of what is called context-free languages. Slide 4 tells us that we can describe the context-free languages a couple of ways. First of all, we can describe them with context-free grammars. That's what we're about to do. And then later, we'll describe them, not part of this module, in a later module, we'll describe them using pushdown automata. Pushdown automata aren't quite as important for context-free grammars as finite automata are for regular languages, but they're still worth knowing about. The most important model for context-free languages is actually context-free grammars. So, here we are in slide 6, and they're going to show us an informal example of a grammar. Then we'll get the formal definition. So it says we can have a grammar G. It says with the S on the left-hand side of the arrow that an S can generate or be replaced by an ASB. Of course, you could keep doing that forever, right? Or an S could be replaced with a lambda. Well, that would stop things from happening forever. Down at the bottom of the page, they show us how to use that grammar to derive a string in the language. So we start with the S. That generates an ASB. We can use that first rule again and replace that middle S with an ASB. And now we have AASBB. And then finally, we can replace that S with a lambda if we want, and we'll have a string of length 4, AABB. Kind of looks like this grammar generates A to the N, B to the N, doesn't it? We'll see. So on slide 7, they give us another derivation. And sure enough, this time we derive AAABBB. So let's just stop and look at the steps of that. I'll give you a second or so to look at the steps at the bottom of the page 7. And then we'll move on to slide 8. All right. So, the top of the page, they give the grammar, and they want us now, having looked at only two examples, to try to guess what that language is. So when I click, it tells me, sure enough, that that language is A to the N, B to the N, for N is greater than or equal to 0. And that actually describes parentheses. A is taking the place of a left parentheses. B is taking the place of a right parentheses. We could have used a left and right parentheses in the grammar if we wanted to. But A and B are often used to take their place. On slide 9, we have a slightly different grammar. An S can be replaced with an ASA, S can be replaced with BSB, or S can be replaced with lambda. At the bottom of the page, we have the derivation, and S is replaced, first of all, with the ASA. I should tell you that we don't have to start with the ASA. We could start with any of the other two productions, okay? We just happen to start with the ASA, so S can be replaced with ASA. Then they replaced that middle S with the BSB, and they got ABBA. On slide 10, we're going to do a slightly different derivation. The bottom, we will start off and generate, we will use the first rule. Again, we don't have to. First rule gives us ASA, and then we'll replace that with BSB. Then we'll go back and use that first rule again and get an ASA in the middle. And finally, we'll replace that S with the third rule, a lambda, and we'll get ABA, ABA. Getting an idea of what this language might be? So let's stare at the grammar. Looks like it's going to begin and end in A's, begin and end in B's, lambda, Let's see what the language is. Aha! The language is strings W followed by strings W reversed, where W is some string over the alphabet AB. And that was the second language we looked back at a few seconds ago. It's palindromes. So here's a third example, page 12, slide 12. It says S can be replaced with an ASB, or S can be replaced with two copies of itself, or S can be replaced with a lambda. This time they've started off with the second production. They don't have to. They could start off with the first one. They started off with the second production. Looks like we'll get two copies of S, right? And then for the first S, they replaced that with ASB. Then they replaced that leftmost S with a lambda. So now we have ABS, and then they replaced the rightmost S with an AB. So when we did this derivation, we replaced the leftmost variable S. And here's another derivation. I'll let you look at it. This time they generated AB, AB. So let's go to slide 14. Here's the grammar again. What is the language? Well, this one's a little harder to describe. Okay, it's the strings W such that the number of A's in W is the same as the number of B's in W. And if you look at any prefix beginning part of a string, the number of A's will always be greater than or equal to the number of B's. You can almost see that by looking at the grammar, because A is generated leftmost, B is generated rightmost. And this actually is a grammar that's often used to describe matched parentheses. The A is, again, taking the place of the left parenthesis. B is taking the place of the right parenthesis. So finally, on slide 15, we come to the formal definition of a context-free language, context-free grammar. Okay, it's a four-tuple. It consists of variables. Sometimes these variables are called non-terminals. It consists of terminals. Those are actually the symbols from the alphabet. It has some special variable called the start variable, or start symbol, or start non-terminal. And then it's got a set of rules, which we've been seeing, called productions. And they're the form variable on the left, and any string of variables in terminals on the right. And that's what we've been seeing. So on slide 16, starts off showing us a grammar, VTSP. What's the language generated by that grammar? Well, it's the strings W such that when we start at S and do a derivation until we get some string in the symbol W, that's the set of all the strings in the language. I think I'll say that again. The language generated by this grammar is the set of all strings W such that we can derive W from the start symbol. And W consists of all terminals. So on slide 17, it defines a context-free language. Pretty easy definition. A language L is context-free if there is a context-free grammar G that generates it. So on slide 18, they talk about derivation order. I find this slide very confusing, to be honest with you. I'm going to skip on to slide. Well, let's stop and take a look at it. They're just telling you that you can derive things in more or less any order, but then they go and botch it by numbering them. I'm skipping slide 18. But when I click on the thing, it shows me a derivation using the rules and the order in which they're there. If we take the rules in a different, okay, I get their point. The leftmost derivation, which will replace the leftmost variable at every step along the way. So if I start out with rule 1, S will be replaced with AB. Then if I use rule 2, which I don't have to, but if I do use rule 2, that will replace that A with the only other choice. No, there's two other choices for A. It'll replace it with small a, uppercase A, still at the B. Then if I use rule 3 and replace that A, that's the leftmost variable there, right? Replace that with the lambda, and now I'll have little a, b. Then I'll use rule 4 to get AABB, and rule 5 to get rid of the B variable by replacing it with lambda. So every step along the way there, I replaced the leftmost variable. Didn't have to, I can get the same string by a rightmost derivation. So in the very bottom here, S goes to AB, starting off, and then the B will be replaced with BB. And then, now the rightmost variable there is still B, so that B is going to be replaced with, a lambda. And I'll have AB, that's right, using rule 5. Okay, now I have just the variable A followed by the terminal B. So that's now rightmost because it's only most, it's the only one there. So we replace that A with AAA. That uppercase A is still the only variable, so we'll replace that with AAB. So we got a rightmost derivation. And on slide 19, they take, is this a different grammar or is this the same grammar? Let me go back and look. Maybe AAA. Ah, it's a different grammar. Okay, so F goes to AAB, A goes to BBB, B goes to A, and we're going to derive ABBBB leftmost, and you can see, if you look at that derivation, that along the way, it replaced the leftmost variable until it finally got a string of terminals. Then it's going to show a rightmost derivation. Along the way, it replaced the rightmost variable until it got the same string, actually. Okay, so now we've seen leftmost derivation and rightmost derivations. It's a good way to see derivations. Now we're actually going to see a picture of a derivation. And these are called derivation trees or parse trees. Another name is also syntax tree. On slide 21, they show a grammar. S goes to AB. And they have an A production and a B production, two A productions and two B productions, because each of those also goes to lambda. They start off in the derivation with S going to AB, and they actually draw a picture of this. S goes to A in the left, B in the right. Then they continue the derivation by replacing the A with AAA, and they draw the picture of that. A is replaced with AA, variable A in the picture. Then they continue and they replace the B. They use the B goes to BB production, and they show that on both the derivation and the tree. And then finally, we let A go to lambda in the derivation, and then we do it on the tree, and we let B go to lambda. We do it on the tree. We call this a derivation tree or a parse tree. We're actually at a terminal string now because lambda doesn't count, right? The terminal string here is AAB. They talk about a yield. I don't know that we really even need to know that term, so we'll notice that it's there, but I don't know that we're actually going to use it. Okay. Then they talk about partial derivation trees. So when we started out and had S go to AB, we hadn't derived a terminal string yet. That was just a partial derivation tree. And then they show more partial derivation trees, and they show what I see what they're doing. They show the yield for the partial derivation tree. Well, turns out that's really a sentential form. If you look up in the derivation where we have this AAAB, any string of terminals and non-terminals that we can get from the start symbol is called a sentential form. And they're just calling the sentential form, when you look at it at the base of the derivation tree, they're calling that a yield. Sentential form is the important term here. And then they're telling us that sometimes it really doesn't matter whether you do a leftmost derivation or a rightmost derivation, you'll end up with the same derivation tree. That's actually the good case. That's what you want. You want to be able to get the same derivation tree, whether you do a leftmost derivation, a rightmost derivation, or even something in between. But in a few minutes we'll see that that isn't always the case. Okay. So now it says on slide 31 that we have concentrated on generating. We've been generating strings from grammars. And now they ask us, how about the analytical aspect? And the analytical aspect is called parsing. Slide 32, it shows us that that a parser takes an input string and a grammar and produces a derivation. So what you're going to be given when you look at parsing, you're going to be given the input string, you're going to be given the grammar, and you're supposed to come up with a derivation. So on slide 33, they show the input AABB, they show the parser, which is essentially implementing the grammar, and what we want to know is, how do you get AABB from this grammar? So we have to kind of discover this derivation. It's pretty easy when the grammar is small. When the grammar is big, like for a programming language, it takes a computer program. So they're going to do it by exhaustive search. They're going to start out, they know they want to get AABB. So they look at all possible derivations of length 1, because it's going to start out with one of these. Now, it might be S goes to SS, might be S goes to ASB. It will not be S goes to BSA, because that'll always begin with a B, and our string begins with an A, and surely it's not S goes to lambda. So we're going to be starting out with one of those first two that are listed there. Okay, so they've crossed out the last two for the reasons that I just mentioned on slide 35. Okay, now we try both of these. We'll take the S goes to SS, and we'll look at all the possible combinations for those. Now, in reality, you won't have to do all this. You'll see pretty fast which way you want to do it. And once again, they will take the second one. If you click, you're still in slide 36. They'll show if you take that second choice, they'll show you what all the possible choices are for that, some of which are possible and some of which are not. Certainly anything that begins with a B isn't going to be possible. And the bottom one, they've crossed out the very bottom one, AB, because that's too small and we're all done. And they've crossed out the ABSAB because our string begins with AA, not with AB. So it could be any one of these choices. You probably see by now which one it really is. All right, continuing along, we take one of the possible ones on slide 37, and they manage to get to phase 3 AABB by starting out with S goes to ASB, then going to ASB again, and then having the S goes to lambda. So that is a derivation of AABB. And on slide 38, they just put that all together. We started out with input AABB, we were given a grammar, we discovered the derivation. As humans, we could have discovered that a lot faster. Okay, so then they go into a discussion of the complexity, and it turns out that if you don't have any lambda productions, nor any what they call singleton productions, A just goes to B without anything else around it, then the number of phases for the string is going to be 2 times the length of the string. And I'll let you stop and mull that over and think about that. And then they extend that to K rules. And again, presumes you don't have any epsilon productions or singleton productions. The time for the phase 1 is k, your k possible derivations, time for k k2 is k times k, so there's k squared possible derivations, and so forth. The time for phase 2 times the length of w is k to the 2 times length of w. So the possible derivations, and we almost saw that even with that small grammar, is k to the 2 times the length of w, which is exponential in the length of w, and believe me, this is not the way you want to discover a derivation. So the total time needed is going to be the sum of all that. And once again, this is not the way to discover a derivation. Most of the grammars we use in class will be small enough so you'll discover it much more rapidly than this. And for grammars for programming languages, if we had to discover the structure of a program given a grammar, in this amount of time, we'd be sitting in front of the computer while our programs compile for a long time. And it turns out there are faster algorithms. Now, I'm going to skip over S grammars until we get to slide 48. If you would like to know more about fast ways to get derivations, you really need to take a compiler class. So on slide 48, they talk about ambiguity. Now, we've almost seen ambiguity before. Here's a grammar at the top here. It says E goes to E plus E, or E times E, or parenthesis E, or an A. And this is actually a grammar for generating arithmetic expressions just using A's. So they derive, using a leftmost derivation, they derive A plus A times A, and they show the parse tree for this. Looks pretty good. I mean, this is the way I would group these things together. First you do the multiplication and you add that to A, right? So slide 49 so far looks okay. Slide 50 does another derivation. It's also a leftmost derivation, okay? And we get A plus A times A. But the derivation is slightly different, and the parse tree that shows it is surely different. It's grouping the A plus A, and then it's multiplying by A. Now, this is not the way I do arithmetic, so something's not good here. Okay, we have two derivation trees for the same string. Turns out we have two leftmost derivations for the same string. That's enough to say that this grammar is ambiguous. The grammar E goes to E plus E, etc., is ambiguous because there is a string, and that's all you need, one string in the language, which has two derivation trees. We could also use the leftmost derivation rule. We could say on slide 53 that that grammar is ambiguous since that string A plus A times A has two different leftmost derivations. Now we can actually see it. In the topmost leftmost derivation, we start out replacing E with E plus E. And in the bottom one, we started out by replacing E with E times E. And then we'll have to use the plus, and in the top one, then we'll have to use the times. We're going to end up with the same string. So that's an ambiguous grammar. That's not good. We don't like ambiguous grammars. Formal definition is on slide 54. Context-free grammar G is ambiguous if some string W in the language has two or more distinct derivation trees. Alternatively, you could define it as saying on slide 55 that a grammar is ambiguous if there exists a string such that there are two or more leftmost derivations. Or we could say there are two or more rightmost derivations for the same string. Okay, why do we care about ambiguity? Well, on slide 56, we care for that grammar because the arithmetic's going to be wrong in the rightmost parse tree. So that's one problem. They're going to get the wrong answer for 2 plus 2 times 2 with the second one, because we know that 2 plus 2 times 2 is supposed to be 6. But ambiguity is bad for programming languages because if you put if you put a program into a compiler, don't you expect it to find one structure for it? Yes, indeed. So when we describe programming languages, I'm on slide 60, we expect that those parameters will be unambiguous. And we'd like to be able to remove the ambiguity. Now, we can easily fix the ambiguity here on slide 61 for this grammar. Now, it takes a little while to think about this, but we know that times takes precedence over plus. And when you're doing grammars using precedence like this, the higher precedence will be lower down in the grammar. So we'll start out with E goes to E plus T, okay? Or E could just be a single term. And then we'll say T goes to T times F, or T can be a single F factor. And then the factor can be an arithmetic, a parenthesized expression, or an A. Now, there's no reason why you should be able to come up with this grammar at this point. In fact, the problem is even worse than this. While I'm here in slide 61, you'll probably say it later, I want to tell you that the problem is really quite bad. As a human, you can sometimes play around and come up with an unambiguous grammar. But in the first case, there's no way you can write an algorithm that will do that for you. That is one of the undecidable problems in computer science. It is undecidable whether a grammar is even ambiguous or not. That means we cannot write an algorithm or a computer program to even tell us if it is, let alone to convert it. That's the first bad news. Second bad news is that some grammars are inherently ambiguous. And you can play around with them all you want. There is no unambiguous grammar. All right, moving along to slide 62. Okay, and they show us in slide 62, they show us a single leftmost derivation for A plus A times A, and they show us the derivation tree, which looks pretty good. And there's no other leftmost derivation. This is the only one. You can play around and try to get another one, but there isn't. Okay, it has a unique derivation tree for that string. For all strings using that grammar, there'll be a unique derivation tree. So this grammar on slide 64, they've repeated the grammar. This is a kind of a standard example for arithmetic expression. It just has plus and times, but we can easily add the other arithmetic operators to this. But this is good for an example. It's non-ambiguous. Every string W generated by the language has a unique derivation tree. Here's one of my favorite examples on slide 65. This comes directly out of programming languages. This drives the students in my compiler class crazy. It's statements, where you're in a language that allows else statements also. So it says here on the left that an if statement can be the word if, followed by some kind of an expression, followed by the word then, followed by some statement. Of course, that could be a sequence of statements, but we don't care about that. Or the if statement can be the word if, followed by an expression, followed by the word then, followed by a statement, followed by an else, and some other statements. Okay, just two productions in the grammar. And if I take the string if expression, then if expression, then statement, else statement, I can come up with two entirely different parse trees for that. Top one shows that the embedded else is rightmost, and then, in fact, the else is associated with the closest if. And the bottom one, the else, isn't associated with the closest if, but the first if. Which one of these do you think is really the correct interpretation? It's the top one. When we write if then else statements, we expect the else to be associated with the closest if. So this grammar is not too good. You wouldn't want to use it to create a parser for a programming language. They mention inherent ambiguity here on slide 67. They take this example, A to the N, B to the N, C to the M, and union that with A to the N, B to the M, C to the M. Do you know what that does? That gives us the language with the first set there has the same number of A's as B's, the second set has the same number of B's as C's, so when you union those together, you can get both of those. Actually, if you intersected that, you would get strings that had the same number of A's, B's, and C's. I think that's not ambiguous. Is that true? I've got to think about that a little bit. But anyway, this example is inherently ambiguous. We could play around, but we would never be able to come up with a grammar for it. It shows A to the N, B to the N, C to the N actually has two derivation trees. Slide 69 talks about compilers. Compilers are one of the major applications of context-free grammars. And it shows a program in one of our favorite languages. Let's see, this could be both C, C++, this could be C, C++, Java. I think it could be any of those, right? Kind of generic. And it says that, okay, if we put that in this program and it runs through the compiler, the machine code that we get out will be something like what they have. They have shown all the pieces. Have they? No, they didn't do every piece of it, but they started out. Okay, so a compiler, it's a lot more complicated than this picture in slide 71. It shows that a compiler consists of a lexical analyzer and a parser. Turns out the parser doesn't really put out the machine code, but this is a good simplification. We saw lexical analyzers when we looked at regular expressions. Lexical analyzers find the regular expressions, finds the words in the program. Then the parser finds the structure, and once it's found the structure, the machine code can be put out. So I'll go along with the picture in slide 71. 72, it says a parser knows the grammar for the programming language. Yes, indeed. So on slide 73, we have a small grammar for a programming language. It says the start symbol is program. It says a program can be a statement list. Statement list can be a statement followed by a semicolon followed by more statement list. Or a statement list can be a single statement followed by a semicolon. Looks like most of the C-type languages that I know. A statement here can be an expression, or it can be an if statement, it can be a while statement, or it could be a statement list within braces. That's kind of C and Java-like, right? Of course, we know statements can be a lot more things than that in most programming languages. An expression can be the sum of two expressions, the difference of two expressions, or it can just be some single identifier, and certainly in most programming languages, expressions can be a lot more than that. They have if statement. If statement can be an if followed by an expression, then a statement, or it can be an if followed expression, then statement, else statement. We know that's ambiguous, right? A while statement can be the word while, followed by expression, followed by do, followed by statement, depending on what the syntax of the particular language is. So the parser would know this grammar on slide 73. Slide 74, we actually use a small subset of that. Actually, that's not even the same grammar, but we'll use a different parser and a different grammar. This is the grammar E goes to E plus E, E times E and N, which is ambiguous, I'll tell you right now, so I guess this is an okay example. No parser could really deal with any ambiguous grammar. We'll put up with this. It says if the input is 10 plus 2 times 5, we want it to be able to derive 10 plus 2 times 5. If it can derive it, then it can put out machine code for it. Slide 75, it says if it can derive it, it can also create a derivation tree. And most parsers do create derivation trees. Slide 76, it says, well, if we can create a derivation tree, we know the structure of this, and we can put out the machine code, and that's a real easy thing to do. If you've got a derivation tree, even you people could probably look at this without having had a compiler class and see that it's not going to be too difficult to put out kind of generic machine code for that very small example. And that's the end of this lecture. On to the homework.